try and salvage what I can. Quick introduction. So, hi everyone. My name's Shen Chohan. So, I work at Microsoft in Redmond. And I work in a group called TED. So, we're not quite an engineering group. We're slightly different. So, I like to think of us as a like the Avengers. So, you know, we have specialists in every area, and we've got like an incredible Hulk in one area and a Stark in another area that basically work on different areas of the business. So, my focus is predominantly around universal applications on the store. So has anyone actually built a universal app first? Let's do a bit of audience gauging. One, two, three. Okay, that's a fair few. Who submitted those apps to the store? All right. Yeah, that sort of makes sense. We don't have many apps in our store currently. The next question I have for you is, who's running Windows 10 technical preview? Hey, that's a good number. Okay, 8.1. That's still pretty good. 8. Vista? Good. All right, cool. It's always a good sign when no hands up go up for that one. So the way I normally like to run these sessions is I'm not very heavy on PowerPoint decks at all. I'm more a typey guy than a clicky-clicky type of guy. So I do like to get into code demos as soon as possible. But unfortunately, there will be some groundwork that I have to cover first to, you know, have a bit of an introduction, show you what's what, and hopefully we'll be able to get started. So I think the first things first, this is my Twitter handle. Feel free to tweet about this session. Nothing I really say here is going to be, you know, confidential or anything like that. So yeah, take photos. If you want, I can pose, do whatever, tweet it. There's my email address. So if after today you find, you know what, there's some cool items that I talked about and you went back and thought, actually, you know what, I should have asked this question, feel free to ping me. I'm generally up at strange hours due to my developer habits. So even if you are awake European time, that shouldn't really affect me too much. And as you can tell, so the agenda is actually pretty short. So I'll go through a bit about what the session is all about and how this session will run. So this session will probably run very differently to how you probably had some of the other sessions that can't vouch for all of them. And then I'm just going to go straight into sort of demoing stuff. So let's talk a bit about how this session will run. So I have an app. I come to Barcelona. I thought, what better application than an app that tells me when to sleep and when to party? So I've got an app called Siesta or Fiesta, the application that will help you decide. And what I would like to do is go through the basic code that I have in place for this application. And then from there, we're going to perform some developer tasks based on what you guys decide. So at the moment, I have a few things sort of backed up in terms of what I would like to talk about. But actually, then what I would like to do is to get your participation in deciding where we move on from there. So I suppose the first question I should have really asked is, who's got a mobile phone? All right, we might have to buy some mobile phones for people. Who's connected to the Wi-Fi? Or has data, at least? Okay, good, I'm going to get more than one vote. Perfect. Right, cool. So, I would like to caveat, this is like a super high-risk demo, right? Anything could happen. So, it already has. My machine didn't have a fun morning today, so bear with me as we go through some stuff. But let's see how we get on, and hopefully I provide something useful. If you then find that actually, you know what, maybe I'm moving too slow or too quick, slow me down or speed me up. I like to be talked with rather than me just constantly talking at you guys. So what I'd like to do is with the magic. Cool. So there's this website, which I'm all going to ask you to go to. So I don't know what people's preferences are, whether it's a QR code or whether it's a website. If you could get your mobile devices out. It's not often you get to go to a session where they ask you to turn your phone, take your phones out and use them and abuse them. So the idea here is, I want you to go to this site. Don't click any buttons just yet. Wait for it. Just literally go to the site and hold fire. Just give me a rough show of hands when you're sort of done so I know when to move on. Like I said, this is high risk, guys. You know, like, my reputation's on the line here. So. how we're looking. We've got one person, two, three, we've got a few more. Yeah, cool. All right. So unfortunately for the people who have watched this session afterwards, this probably won't be great for you to do. But basically, if you bear with us for about 5 minutes, right, cool. So I'm hoping everyone should now be able to see something like this. And if you're not, then now's a good time to shout up. Cool, right. So the idea here is, I've got a website that I built last week. And the idea here is, I want you guys to select the topics that you're most interested in. Doesn't have to be one, multiple. If you're not interested in it, don't click the button. That's the main thing, right? All right, performance, globalization. So at this point now, secretly I'm praying you're going to choose topics that I want to talk about. Performance, man. You guys experience a lot of performance issues? Globalization and test notification. Okay, I can see someone there just constantly clicking performance, hoping they can get to the top. Yeah, I should just disable the buttons once you'd clicked it, right? All right, I have a rough idea. So if anyone's interested, by the way, so the technology used here, this is not an out-of-the-box solution, this is something I built. As you can tell, it's pretty fast. This is using Azure website SignalR and just having that talk out to an MVC site. All right, so I will start with performance, I think. That sounds like a good place to be. And the idea is, hopefully, I'll get to talk about all of these. Now, am I right in thinking that most of you guys are probably from enterprise, so monetization is not key? Cool, because that's the bit I lost. Okay, so let's go and talk about performance first, and then I think it'll be globalization and profiles. If I finish a topic, I'll come back to this, and if something radically has changed, then we'll go with it on the fly. But let's work out performance, globalization, and maybe toast roaming profiles and lifetimes. Cool. Okay. Right, so let's go to it. So let me first show you my wonderful application. So who here has developed more than one universal app? I know we only had a few hands who developed a universal app, just the one. So maybe it's worth explaining, or actually, rather than just developing, who understands what a universal app is and what it's trying to do? Who thinks it's an application where you write your code once and deploy it to multiple devices? Who thinks those devices are from desktop to mobile on any platform? Right, okay, cool. So let's demystify a few things then, because I think that would be the first thing. So when we talk about universal application, we should really call it universal on the Windows platform, right? So that's the first thing. So it doesn't mean that it'll work on your iOS and Android. Now, when we mean universal, we also don't mean write once and deploy too many devices. So we should be very clear about what we mean here. So when we say create a universal application, what we're really saying is actually we're trying to do as much as possible in terms of trying to converge our mobile platform and our desktop platform. You've probably noticed that you write something on the mobile and you think, hey, this is cool, I'm going to write an app on Windows, and then realize that some APIs look almost the same. They're right at the last minute. One line of code is so different that it's not possible. The idea here is we're actually trying to get everything running on the same so you don't distinguish between the two so much. But this then allows you to save a lot of development time, but it doesn't mean that you should just go and deploy that app out everywhere. What we're trying to do is allow you to save time in development so you can reinvest that time in experience. So for instance, if I wrote an app that worked great on a big 4K screen, and I'd scaled it just right, the idea is I wouldn't have that same experience for a mobile device, especially if it's one like a lower end device, because the problem there is actually the screen's only so big that I can't necessarily get the same interactions that I'd expect. So tailor your experience, make sure it's suited for that particular device, because that'll make a whole heap of difference and your end users will thank you for it later. So the other thing I want to talk about is the solution structure. So you'll see here, we have a Windows solution, we have a Windows Phone solution, and we have something called a shared solution. You see it's got a, I'm not really sure what the icon's meant to be. It's two diamonds sort of crashing into each other. But the idea here is that this solution here, it's actually not something that compiles. So if I try right-clicking on it, for instance, you'll see there's no build solution. Actually, what Visual Studio is doing under the hood is it's linking those files. So it's like adding the existing files into your solution. And you'll see that if I look at the references, you'll see that I've got the shared solution. Now, architecturally, what we recommend is where you can, try and put everything in shared, because it makes a big difference in terms of how you then can reuse that. People say, what's the difference between shared and a portable class library? They're very similar in a matter of fact. The key difference here is a portable class library will compile into a DLL, but it doesn't necessarily have all the bits for the runtime components, which the shared will. You'll also notice here that I have an app XAML here, but I don't yet have it in the other two. And that's important to note. And what I can do is, for instance, let's say I've got main page here. You can see that they're both XAML, which means they're both views. So they're different for that device. But yet my view model is down here. And what I can then do is say, well, actually, in my code behind, so I do a very naive sort of change of data context to that view model. But actually, the development as is the same as if it was in the same the project anyway. So it doesn't really make a difference in terms of your developer experience, which is kind of important because it sometimes can be a bit jarring if you have to mess around too much. Luckily, we don't have to do that. So let me just quickly, not sure what the change is there, but just to be on the safe side. So I think that the best thing for me to do is first run the application and show you what it does. I'm not a designer, so you know I didn't necessarily have the chance to spend a lot of time designing my application. As you can see, on the left I have Siesta, on the right I have Fiesta, and in the middle I seem to have a ring. And then I have, from there I have a button to decide whether I want to do Siesta or Fiesta. So I click it, and what basically happens is this is running a highly complex algorithm, which I'll show you in a minute, that decides based on my heart rate, my energy levels, the amount of fizzy drinks, Red Bull, and water. It decides whether I should siesta or fiesta. So at the moment, it's saying we should probably party. So it's pretty good. So let me show you how this looks in our app. So I set the data context to the main page view model, which is down here. And all this is basically just doing is I have a set of properties here that I bind to. I'm assuming everyone's very familiar with data binding. Is that true, or does anyone need? No? It's good? Cool. So what I do is I basically bind the should I fiesta and should I siesta properties, which is telling me whether I should party or not. What I do here is I run this complex algorithm, and then I make a decision. So let me show you this complex algorithm, because I'm quite proud of it. So. Basically, all I'm just doing is doing a random, you know, seeding. It's highly unlikely that you guys should put this into production. If you ever want the source code, I'm happy to share. So let's start off with the first topic. So let's talk about performance. So who here currently already performance tests their app? It's not a lot, right? So let me ask you a question. Do you performance test because you find there's problems? Performance test to see how the app's performing under just general usage? Silence. You guys are a quiet audience, man. I know it's a Friday. Come on, speak to me. All right, cool. So what we normally recommend is actually you should always performance test. Doesn't matter if your app's working fine. It's always a good idea because sometimes it's that little nasty piece of code that you just don't know that's working fine. All of a sudden, you push it to another machine, and it just starts falling over. So I'm going to show you quickly how to performance test a universal app. So actually, let me close down the so it gives us a better. Yeah, I don't see that. Cool. So in Visual Studio, we give you the Analyze menu. And in there, you'll be able to do performance and diagnostics. So what you can do with the universal app is you can do multiple things. You can do CPU usage, memory usage, energy consumption is actually quite key. It's worth checking out. And XAML UI responsiveness. So for instance, if I wanted to do CPU usage, I can't do memory usage because they collide. But basically, let me just tick a few here and let's start it up. What you'll see is it's going to kick off my application at the bottom here. It's loading. It's taking a bit of time. It's running up the test environment. Oh, or maybe not. Ah, there we go. And then I'm just going to run my complex algorithm, go back to Visual Studio, and I'll stop the collection. So obviously, because I wrote this app, it performs pretty well. It's got low memory. The UI is really responsive. And you can see there that through my various charts, let me see if I can make that a bit bigger for you guys. It gives you a load of interesting information. So as you can tell, my complex algorithm is pretty efficient. Didn't really drink too much CPU there. But also the power usage. So power usage is actually really interesting because the key thing here is, especially when you're writing a universal app, you don't necessarily know the device it's going to run on. And you don't also know whether the device is going to be at the point where it's about to die on the user. And if your app is something that actually is quite critical, a classic example could be, I don't know if we get in Europe, is it Uber? Anyone heard of Uber? It's like a taxi calling service. So the idea is you use your phone and you can get a GPS signal, and then from there you can go and, you know, call a taxi. And pretty popular in the States. So the idea here is obviously if I'm writing an app that does that sort of aggregation of data and loads of different sensors and battery consumption could end up seeing a bit of a sink. So you obviously, if your app is one of those that takes in GPS, you want to be careful about the usage on the battery. You'll see frame rates is also an interesting one. Granted, I wasn't doing too much in my app that was going to make it go crazy. But also the UI thread. Now, it's interesting to see that why isn't frame rates sort of related directly to the UI thread? Well, in essence, sometimes you may be editing things on the UI thread, but not changing the layout. So they're two very different things. So if I'm constantly re-rendering the screen, then that would mean that I get a lot of visual throughput. My frame rates would probably start, you know, dropping. You can see that my threshold is like 60 frames a second, which is pretty standard. But it could mean that actually, so what you can see here, where I've got really high amounts of usage, that's when I started basically loading the UI. So you can actually go and do a section performance if you want. If we talk about that. So the other interesting to note here is actually, as with most things, you can actually go and dive down and work out where in your code things were taking time. So actually, a lot of it is probably more the fact that actually the performance analyzer was running for the first time. And by the looks of things, that's probably taken up most of it. But my others was the launch of an application, which is pretty true, right? Because my application is very simple. And then from there, I've got main. And then I've got my rest of it. So let's try doing something that's going to upset this a bit. So let me take my complex algorithm, and let's make it slightly more complex. Let's say while energy level is less than 1,000, just do nothing. You can see why I had problems with my machine earlier, right? So in essence, what this is going to do is it's just going to hold it in a loop, and it will just never stop looping. And we'll try performance testing this now and see what happens. So there you go. So you'll see it's loaded it up pretty fast this time, as expected. I run this. So in essence now, my code is probably running a million miles an hour in an empty loop, not doing much. And let's maybe have to give it something more intensive. We don't know. Right, cool. And let me now stop that. So by the way, you saw that actually Visual Studio, as it's collecting the data, it's running those graphs. That's kind of important as well, because sometimes you don't want to stop the app, right? Sometimes I don't want to stop collecting. So let's go to the one that we're interested in. So you can see there that actually my CPU took a hike. Now, this is kind of important in a lot of respects, because who remembers when we used to have Intel processors with a single core but with 3 gigahertz? All right, do you remember that? That was like awesome, right? You're like, yeah, I got 3 gigahertz worth of power. I'm gonna rock, I'm gonna make my app do spinning stuff and things the user doesn't need, but it just looks cool, right? And then what happened was the industry got a bit more smarter and then you started getting multiple cores. Now the problem here is if your app's designed to run on a single core, for instance, so let's say 3 gigahertz, one core, your app runs perfectly fine. Then what happens is machines become a multi-cored, as you'll see, CPU. Let's see if I can show. Can I see logical cores? Change graph to logical. So here's got 4 cores on my machine here. And you can see that it's balancing OK. But the idea here is if your app was only ever designed to run on one core, what you'll generally find is as the machines get more advanced, the slower your app starts running, which seems kind of odd, right? Because what you've essentially done is you've gone, well, 3 gigahertz, one core, or I could probably have 2 cores at 1.5 gigahertz, or I could get 8 cores at 1.5 gigahertz, or, you know, 8 cores at 1.2 gigahertz. So in essence, my app's only now got bandwidth of, you know, 1.2 gigahertz, but yet I've still got 7 cores sitting there not doing anything. So just be mindful, especially when you're testing, to make sure that when you are doing CPU-intensive stuff, that you take that into consideration, where if you can throw things off into different cores, it's always useful. I don't know if you guys have used TPL, the Task Parallel Library. That's something that's worth looking into if you haven't. And that will allow you to almost tell your processes how to break things up into various cores. So you can actually say, I want this application to run, or this process to run across the 2 cores when I'm doing this particular calculation. So there we go. So we have some CPU usage. Actually, let me see if I can, let's diagnose this. So I've got here, and you can see that actually where I've got my CPU usage is probably in here somewhere. So it's in the command execute. And I'm just looking at the total CPU milliseconds. And you can see it's 96.96. And as you start drilling down, you'll start seeing where the problems start occurring. And then it goes off to external code. So at this point here, this is pretty much my while loop. And that's where we do our diagnosis. So let me do that. So that is pretty much the performance side of things in a nutshell. So there are certain things you can do to avoid this. Just be very sort of careful about when you're running things on the UI thread. Don't necessarily think that everything needs to go on there because it doesn't. And just be careful as well with thread management and memory usage. Who generally suffers with CPU or who suffers with memory? No one suffers with either. I mean, not personally, I mean within your apps. Yeah. Cool. Okay, so one thing to note is if your memories generally, especially on a universal app, is the one thing that's painful. The only reason why I say that is because with memory, especially if you're loading rich content, you can sometimes find that it takes a very big hike. And what you can do, especially when you're doing like a memory profile, is you can actually see when it does a garbage collection. There are certain tips and tricks around this. So, you know, there's virtualizing that you can achieve using various controls. So most of the universal controls virtualize anyway for you. So even if you've got a list of data that's got like thousands and thousands of objects in, that's fine. One thing we would say is if you're after a high-performing app, data binding is probably not the recommended way. It sounds kind of odd, but actually it's not. So what happens is when you data bind, in essence, it reads that object, and then it basically builds an object graph in memory of all the nested objects within them. When you start doing that, actually, you're loading a hell of a lot of information into memory. So as you're scrolling, what's happening is it's recycling at one point and loading at another point. There's a buffer on either end, even with virtualization. The problem is that if it's that deep, your tree, what you'll then start finding is all of a sudden that every time the data mining engine's absolutely getting hammered. And the way to get around this is actually build very specific objects for that particular control. That's one way around it. Or you just don't data bind and you actually go and manually go and put things into the list itself. It's a bit of a long way of doing it. If you're using C Sharp, you'll get a lot of verbose code. But just try and make sure that when you are data binding, that don't put the object that you probably just built, well, got from your service straight to the control. If your control only needs to know 2 properties out of the nested property, just extract those properties out first and then go and bind them to the object. You'll notice a big increase in performance. So was that useful? Was there a topic I didn't cover in performance that people were like, oh man, that was rubbish. He covered just graphs. Was there any topics that people want covered outside of that? Because speak now before I move on to whatever's next on the list. No? Cool. All right. Sensors. All right. Someone obviously started liking sensors a bit late. Cool. So we can talk about sensors. So sensors is a funny topic. So there's like a million of them, really. There's so many. I'll probably just show you how to call into the sensors and get information rather than run through all of them, because actually you can sort of guess what a compass does, and you can guess what a gyro does, and you can guess what the geolocator does. But actually, on our platform, it's kind of easy. Actually, the methodology of how you use a sensor is the same. It doesn't change. Your code doesn't take a drastic change. And I'll show you what I mean in a minute. But the idea is that if you know how to write for one sensor, then you sort of know how to write for all of them. And it's pretty simple like that. We do generally say they don't try and use every sensor under the hood. And there are certain things around accuracy as well, which I'll show you as well, which you need to take into consideration. I'm sure everyone's at some point tried to use the compass, and then it says, use the figure of eight, and then you have to do that funny thing of making your phone do that, and you look ridiculous in public. But that's the sort of stuff where I'll show you how you can get that sort of information. All right. So let's take... let me just put it here. I'll just write some simple code. All right. So, use my sensor. Got to be careful when I start calling these methods. Right, cool. All right. So I'm just going to call it actually sensor. Let's be very generic, right? So if I want a compass, and the one thing is, so I can get the current reading if I want, and that will have various things. So there's magnetic north and true north. Do people actually know the difference between magnetic north and true north? That's probably a good thing to start with. Okay, cool. So this requires probably a bit of explanation. So when we say magnetic north is not the North Pole. Magnetic north is what you'd use if you were on a ship somewhere and navigating it. And then you've got true north. True north is what we call the North Pole. Magnetic north is actually near Alaska. So this is actually where the Earth's magnetic field is between north and south. So it's slightly off center. And it changes. It's not static, so it varies from year to year. And it's good depending on whether, if your app is actually just going to do navigation, probably recommend magnetic north over true north. But if actually you're not going to do navigation, not sure why you'd use a compass to anything else, but then it's okay to use the true north. So you probably see as well, so there I've got the heading accuracy. So what this is telling me is how well is that sensor calibrated? So with this, you will get various. So you'll get high, unknown, and reliable, and approximate. If it's unknown and reliable, at that point, you need to get your user, you'll have to actually go and invoke something on the UI itself to say, hey, user, this doesn't seem so great. Can you do that spinny thing with your phone to get this working? And have something on screen to do that, and then try it again, and see whether the accuracy is improved. Now, the other thing you'll have on here, here's a reading change. So in essence, every time there's a change, you can do your usual stuff, and you'll get exactly the same as what you had before. So it's always useful to know. So what I'm now going to do is, if I've gone through compass, let's change this, and I'm just going to say accelerometer. Do I get default? And then I can get the current reading again. So you sort of get the gist, right, of how this is sort of working. I just choose my sensor. Accelerometer has the shaken thing, which is kind of cool, but also kind of awkward, depending on how you expect the user to use that in public. But there's also, so the reading changed as well. So let me show you the differences here. So you obviously won't get magnetic north and true north, but you'll get accelerometer against X and Y and Z. So does everyone know how X, Y, and Z work? So X is this way, Y is that way, and then Z is like a yaw. It's kind of difficult to explain, but it's like there's a pitch, a roll, and a yaw, similar to sort of what pilots would do with a plane. And then again, that will have the reading change as well, which will also give you those. you can actually change the reporting interval. So one thing to note about reporting interval, if you set this to a really, 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 really low number, then what you'll start finding is if the device has a battery, it won't do for long. And if the device has a fan, it'll just go crazy because you'll be asking information all the time. And there's some cool projects out there. So they actually use these sensors. There's one called Guide Dogs. Has anyone heard of Guide Dogs? So Guide Dogs is an application that uses a load of sensors to help navigate visually impaired people to places. So it was a project on it. It's pretty cool, but it uses all these sensors. And that, for that particular scenario, actually updating frequently is a valid scenario. The idea here is that because there aren't enough guide dogs to go around all the time, that actually they're trying to use technology to help overcome that. So they use the sensors to try and help, sensors plus other tech, to try and work out how a visually impaired person can leave their house, you know, go to the bus stop, get on a bus, get on a train, and then go into London. And when you're doing things like that, actually having something frequent is really useful. I think that's a valid case. But also, you'll have to play with the numbers. Sometimes you might find that if you have it too high, that you just won't get the information enough. Actually, let's go through one more. So, again, you see the same. So you get the idea, right? So if you work out what sensor you want to use, it's pretty much just call get default on it. And then from there, you'll get an instance back, and you're good to go and play with all those readings. Obviously, the one thing you've got to be careful of is if you're using a pattern where you're using these sensors on multiple pages, just make sure you're disposing of them correctly. You know, like, don't just blindly go and create them every time, because the problem you'll have is you'll just start creating too much overhead. Sometimes what's normally done is you'll have some sort of singleton pattern where you're going to create the sensor, get it ready, and then from there on, anything that needs to consume it just goes and calls into that singleton instance and just goes and uses that particular method. That's probably the best way to do this. All right. So that was sort of sensors as well. That was a pretty short one, actually, so that's pretty good. Did I cover everything? Was there anything that people wanted covering in that session that I didn't? Sure, go for it. Yeah. So that was devices without sensors. You need to shout. Yeah, so okay, yeah, sure. So that's a good question, actually. So one thing is, how do I know that my device actually has a gyro? How do I know it's got this sort of stuff? So actually, one thing you can do is you can query it. You can say to the device, hey, what do you have? So let's do device information. So there's something called device information and find all peers. I have loads of fun with async. Wait. I often get told that because I use var a lot, I'm lazy. But I said, at least I don't use dynamic, because that's just chaos, right? That means I don't have a clue what's going on. Cool. Right. So you can basically query this, and in essence, you'll see there that when I do a device information and find all eight, what I'll be able to get is all the devices that are connected and that I'll have a chance to play with. So from there, I'll then be able to work out and enumerate through those devices and work out what I have and what I don't have. It's kind of interesting. What I can do with this as well is when I call find async, and I actually pass it a selector, so I can be very specific. Rather than just say, give me all the information you have, because it could take a while, especially if I'm doing things like Bluetooth, I can actually be very specific. And each device has its own GUID. You'll be able to find them on an MSDN. And you can just pass in like a selector saying, actually, I want you to search on this query with this GUID. So it only tailors that for that particular search, which then means that actually you can get your information a lot quicker. But that would be a scenario that I'd probably use this sort of stuff for. And that will give you everything you need to know, including if it's enabled or not. Does that, hopefully that answers the question of knowing if your devices are. All right. Any other questions? Yeah, sure.
NFC will also support.
Yes. Yes, NFC will. So you can. Anything that's connected to the device will be there. So that's NFC included, the Bluetooth. So any BTLE stuff will be in that list as well. Yeah, so you should be able to do that. And with 8.1, you can do like things like even query the GAT characteristics on a Bluetooth LE beacon and stuff like that. So you can go pretty low level and even write to that beacon if you want. There's a lot you can do with that. All right, so how am I doing for time? All right, cool. Maybe I can cover all of them. Let's see how we get on. All right, so we've covered... Someone still wants to do monetization. We'll get there in the end, yeah. Okay, cool. So let's do roaming... Oh, no, live tiles. Didn't see that. So live tiles. So as I'm sure you're all aware, Windows 10 start screen has changed a bit. So therefore, your live tile is no longer a full, beautiful screen. It's not strictly true. You have the option of turning on and if you want. But so you can see here that actually what happens is you can play with the start menu a bit. So depending on how you want your stuff to be displayed, you can do all sorts. But the other thing is that actually even here you still get all the tiles. So I can still go and change the sizes and stuff like that. So the one thing about tiles is What are they really for when we think about a tile? The tile is basically to give a very light notification about what's happening and what your apps... It's not designed to be very in your face, right? It's not designed to go in and say, hey, look at me, scream, shout, you should look at this now, it's urgent. That's the wrong use. That's more a toast notification. For a live tile, it should be just informational based. It shouldn't be mission critical. You should also factor in the case that actually the tiles are different sizes, so don't build a tile on one size and expect the user to know it, because sometimes the tiles will change, and now we have a plethora of different tile sizes. You can go from really small ones to really big ones, and there are some that are available on the phone. Some that are available on Windows as the client desktop, but won't be available on the phone. So that large tile that I did on the store, you won't be able to get that on the phone just yet. So just be mindful of that and keep that into consideration. So let's build out a live tile. So I'm just going to put this here, I think. Let's see if this works. Cool. So apologies for not writing all this code out from scratch. But let me walk you through what's happening here. So, like with the sensors, when we talked about there's a default way to get information, actually, it's the same with tiles and toasts. So there's a manager for that, basically. There's a tile update manager. And the idea here is what you do is you go and select your template. So there are loads to choose from. Let me show you the enumeration so you get an idea. So you can see, like, there's quite a few to choose from, right? I mean, like, it depends on what you want to do. It's like loads. We'll probably just stick to this, I think, might be the best thing. But in essence, when the tile comes back, it comes back as XML. So what you're really just doing is pushing XML out. What we've done here is we've tried to abstract that away slightly from you so you don't have to understand the XML intimately. But you still, when you're editing it, you'll still have to know basically what to change where. So let me show you. Let's get up a... template. So basically, this is a really good place to go. So if you just search for tile notification template, I'm sure all search engines will get you to the same place. But the idea here is it shows you the loads of various things you can go for. And the list is I mean, you can see it's going, right? And notice that some aren't supported by the phone. So I wouldn't suggest you try and do all of them. But, you know, at least work out which ones work for you and which ones don't. Some are, like, very... I mean, if you have a look at that, it's just a whole load of text. Personal feeling, when it's a tile that size and it's just a load of text, you're not really giving useful information. It's like that saying, you know, like, don't have a whole novel on one slide on your PowerPoint. It's that sort of mantra. You should try and keep it really simple, because when a user sees it, the tile doesn't appear for, you know, like, if you have a look, it stays on there, but it flicks. So you don't necessarily know if the user's going to see it straight away. So if it's really long, they're not going to get a chance to read all of it. So the other thing to know, so I talked about that it's XML. Well, actually, this is the XML that you'll see come back. So you'll see here, shall we go to the one we've actually selected? Right, cool. So I think it's that one. Yeah, it's this one. So let's go to the next one. Right, here we go. Yeah, so this is the XML that I get. So you can see here that basically it's got its own binding template, and it's got some elements called text. And all I'm just doing actually is just editing that. So you can see here that what I do is on the tile XML that I get back from the update manager, I go and say get element by tag name, text. And then I just pick the first one. And then all I'm just doing is I'm just appending hello world to that. So now I've manipulated my XML. The next thing to do is to go and actually notify. So what I then do is create a notification, tile notification. And then I call the update manager again and saying, hey, can you create an update for my application? And there's an update. And I just pass my notification. Now, the key thing here is that this is actually pushing an update pretty much as and when the code executes. That's not always useful. So what you can do is you can schedule updates. In this case, I'm hard coding hello world. That's probably not good for a lot of people here. One thing you can do if you don't want to generate these is you can actually go and basically give it a URL on a server or a website. And what it does is it'll pull that XML down, and that's what it'll push out. So if you want, let's say, for instance, you've got a worldwide user base of a few million users, and you want to send a tile notification, it might make more sense to actually just say, hey, go to this URL. And then when you change that URL with, you know, that particular XML that you want the notification to appear on, you'll then get something useful, and all users will get the same message, hopefully at roughly the similar time based on your schedule. And that's quite useful. So let me just... It's actually called a schedule tile notification. Should probably need to new it up. So here you go, I've got the content, and then I can say the time of delivery, but there's also, I think I've just made that one up. But when you call update here, you'll do start periodic update, and there's a batch update, and that's where you'll be able to then pass in your URL. Now, important thing to note here is, I can actually also enable queues. So let's say I've got like five. Actually, the limit is five. So let's say I've got five updates I need to push. It might not make sense to push them all at once, because then my tile is just going to not really give information. I'll probably just get the last one. What you can do is you can queue them up, and you can enable queuing. So you can say, well, actually, what's really important is that all this information goes out. But I want to make sure that I don't bombard the user, or they miss four of the, and they only get the last one, because it might not work. So you can actually do periodic. And what I can do here is I can actually enable the notification, but I can also be very specific. I can say, well, actually, only on particular tile sizes do I want to notify. So you might not want to queue them up for everything, which is also quite useful, because sometimes the large tile might be giving you enough information that you don't need to go and do a whole queue mechanism, where the smaller tiles might say, well, actually, it doesn't have enough info, but they still need that information. So therefore, I'll queue a few tiles up so I can then get them rolling through. The other thing is I can actually go and get the schedule of that tile notification and remove them. So if for whatever reason I pushed a tile out and then realized it was no longer relevant, I can just remove it from the queue, and that's fine as well. You'll sometimes find this is actually already done on a like Windows phone with the notifications. Like sometimes if you get a lot of notifications, it sometimes decides, well, actually, this one's been preceded. And we have something on Windows Phone which is like a ghost notification. So in essence, it doesn't flash upon screen or do anything like that. It just sits in your notification center. So this is sometimes quite useful, because sometimes you always end up clearing the previous one. Yeah, sure.
And I was make my first application. Mm-hmm. We have to do this with the XML, with the XML.
Yeah.
So when we have a lot of problems, then when the notification queue find bad time, you or something else is going wrong, you not see what is wrong.
Yes.
It's only not rotate. Do you not have any tool there I can check my XML and I see what is going wrong?
Yes. Okay. So the question here was, when you first start developing this sort of tools, you end up having to generate the XML yourself before we came up with some of this magic. The key thing here is though, if you're creating the XML yourself, then how do you know that it's correct? How do you know it's going to work? Because the schema is very specific, right? The problem is you don't really get any notification that things have gone wrong. So how do you validate it? Currently at the moment, I think there is a website that actually does validate it on MSDN where you can just pass it in. In general, what I would say is it's probably better for you to go and use one of the pre-enumerated stuff that's already there. You'll find the list is pretty long anyway. In general, if you're trying to customize your tile too much, it might be worth questioning why is it that the millions of tiles that we already have are unsuitable. Yeah.
And the business have asked them, that yeah. must do it. And the problem is if nothing works, when is something going wrong, the tiles.
Yeah, if there's something going wrong, it'll just go blank. Unfortunately, it won't notify you that something's going blank. The only reason why it doesn't do that is predominantly because if you work it out from a sort of a store perspective, if I published it on the store and my tile wasn't working, then I'd get a lot of errors coming in and it might be very difficult to diagnose. And I don't think we report that back because it's the OS that's getting the information, that's doing the turn, not your app. So it's like if a tile changes, it's the OS making that decision based on that schedule, not necessarily your app. Your app doesn't have to technically be running. Once it's ran once, then the tile starts updating, but it doesn't necessarily have to remain front and center for it to carry on working, if that makes sense. So yeah, it's a good question. Best thing to do actually is I'll bring up my email at the end of the session again. Drop me a mail. Because actually feedback like this is pretty important because my role is predominantly going back to engineering saying, hey, we've got people trying to do this and we didn't think of it. Maybe we should start investing in this area. And that's actually quite a good one. I like that, yeah. Cool, so that's actually tile notification. So, I mean, we've tried to make it as simple as possible, hopefully not too complicated. Does anyone have any questions around this? No? You're all gonna have beautiful tiles in the future. Guys, I have high hopes for you. You do know this now. Now I've done this session, there is no going back. I'm going to ask TechEd for all the registered attendees, and I'm going to search for you on the store and see what comes up. So. All right, cool. So let's see what was next. Covered sensors, covered live tiles, covered performance. So the next one here is roaming profiles. I'm waiting for time. Okay. So roaming profiles. So roaming profiles is an interesting one. So we have, and I didn't mention there actually, but I'll cover it now. We have something called local profile. So a local profile is basically based on just that user. It doesn't really leave the machine sort of thing. But a roaming profile is interesting, but you should be careful how you use it. So the idea of a roaming profile is not to go and store those large 1 terabyte files for that user that might need it across another machine. It's really, really low usage. So, you know, the idea is a very simple text file doesn't do too much at best. There are different variations you can have of a roaming profile. So you can have a settings, which is like a key value pair scenario. You can have a container, which is like a key value pair, but in a list, it's pretty much the same. And then you get a file as well. And the idea behind the roaming profile is when you make changes to these things, that actually it'll sync across the user and all their machines. So the key thing here is the user has to make sure that they've obviously logged in with the necessary Microsoft credentials or AD credentials on their actual Windows 8 device or 8X device. What this will then do is when a change happens, your application, you can notify your application to say, hey, there's been a change in a roaming profile somewhere. You need to update your profile or maybe gather some information. And that's kind of very useful. A good example where I can see roaming profiles is pretty good is probably maybe if I name a few examples, I think Netflix or Kindle. when you're watching something or reading something halfway through and then you pick up another device and it should be like the carry-on scenario. In my roaming profile, what I should store is, hey, the user was here. And then they pick up another device and the device go, oh, right, cool, where was the user last? And it's like, oh, the user was at this point. Okay, let me load it up there. And that's where roaming profiles really comes into its own. The idea here is what I'm trying to get at is it's about experience, right? When you develop any app, it should always be about the experience first. It shouldn't be about the, you know, the design principle behind your architecture, and it shouldn't be about the rest of it, because that is all dictated by how your user uses the app. And if you can make a connected experience that is smooth across all the devices, the idea is if the user doesn't know that it's happening, that's normally the best experience. And roaming profiles is one of those ones that allows you to do that without necessarily having to put too much effort into getting there. So let me show you what we have on roaming profiles. So let me talk through roaming settings first. That's a good one. Cool. So in the Windows storage, there's something called application data. And here you can see I've got roaming settings just for, as we talked about, local. You've also got the local ones there as well. You just literally, it's literally just a flip bit. You just change it over, and you'll just change automatically to local and roaming. Now you can see here, actually, what I'm doing is it's similar to what you've seen before. It's like a key value pair, right? So I pass in an example setting here called Hello World. And then when I want to pull it back, I just go and pull it back in the same way as if I'm indexing it. And then if it's null, it means basically the profile has not had anything. Might be the first time to do it. Else, there is data there, and maybe at this point I should do something in my app that makes use of that information. And then the final bit is just removing the setting. So based on your scenario, it's probably a good, just make sure you tidy up after you've got a few of these settings, because what you'll start finding is if your app is something that likes to write a lot of settings and you start introducing new settings, and sometimes setting names, people make them dynamic, so it's not a fixed thing here. It could be dynamic based on like timestamps and stuff like that. If you're going to do that, just make sure you clean up as well, because your app will start leaving quite a big footprint. So that setting's sort of in a key value pair. Let me show you the folder one, which I think is probably going to be more popular only because it's writing stuff to a file, and that's probably can hold a bit more. All right. So again, it's very similar. So where I had roaming settings, I've got roaming folder. By the way, I should also probably point out there is a quota limit on this. You can request more. It is possible, but it's always best to check that actually you're not going to blow through that quota. But here what I'm doing is I'm just basically creating a file. And in that file, let me move the mouse. In that file, I'm just storing a timestamp, basically. So that's the first write timestamp. And then in the second one where I'm reading it, all I'm just doing is from my roaming settings, I'm pulling back that file, and then I'm just reading the timestamp in there. But you'll see, again, it doesn't take a lot of code. It's normally just a couple of lines just to get it in. And then again, just like one or two lines just to pull it back out. And it's amazing what a difference this can make to a user, because it's always slightly uncomfortable for a user, especially when they've picked up a device, and especially if it was like a bookmark or something, or they were using a particular view in your application, and then they load it up on another device. And I don't know how it is with your organizations, but bring your own devices and stuff like that is a classic example. And if they are on the Windows platform, then actually this would be a great scenario, because it does mean that it'll lift and move off as you're going, you know, between your devices. So that's sort of the stuff about roaming profiles. Does anyone have any questions around this? Yeah, sure.
Have you a sample business case for this?
Is there a business case for this?
Yeah. I have no idea. I think for me, can I activate or deactivate something when I see, okay, we are a Swiss company, and when the employee with tablet is in Germany, he cannot access some data.
So the,
is this possible with this, or is this?
So okay, so let's talk a bit about this. So I think a lot of it was what's the business case around this, right? And I think one of the things you said was, well, if I've got like an app and they move to different regions, then it should enable or disable things. So that wouldn't be a use case scenario. What you're talking about there is probably more geofencing, where you can say, if you're in this area, then I want you to do this, this, this. I would say, for instance, let's put it this way. Let's say, for instance, your application was something that was used by a person that was potentially working at their desk in an office in Barcelona. And they're working with this app, and they've realized that they've got to get on a flight. They go on a flight to Germany. Then I go to their German office, they're logging to their machine, and they're like, oh, well, where was I? I mean, what was I looking at? Your roaming profiles would be great, because you could store that information. So when I load up your app, the app goes, oh yeah, when you're in a Barcelona office, this is what you were looking at. Now I'm bringing that same screen back up. So think of it as like a continuation of experience. That's the best way to do it. So wherever you find there's a break in the experience, whether it's more about when the user changes devices. That's the key thing, right? Because if they're not going to change device, then you don't need to roam it. You could just use your local. There's no need to put it as a roaming profile. But in most cases, like if I'm building a universal app, put it this way, even if I was at the point where, let's say we talked about Barcelona office and an office in Germany, between that, I would have got in a taxi, I would have got on a plane and got another taxi, right? While I'm in the taxi, I pull out my mobile phone. Now, let's assume that it's a very popular Windows phone, right? And they look on their Windows phone and you've built a universal app. So they're using the same application now and it's the same credentials and everything. So when they load up the app, the Windows phone goes, I know where you were. Let me carry on that experience rather than let's search through maybe whatever lists you were doing. And then the user has to manually go and click, oh yeah, I wanted this and then I wanted this and I was looking at this particular information here on this particular chart. It's not a must use scenario, but where you do have that break between devices, it's a nice to have. It's something that would make it a lot more easier. You won't be able to apply it to every scenario. If the user only ever uses one device, it doesn't make sense. Yeah. If you're only ever going to have one machine, then...
Is it possible to push this files? So when I scroll on one device, then...
Will it be possible to push the files? So the files themselves sync automatically. There is something around a priority you can set. That only... So if I bring back this settings example, for instance, let me just... So see what you've got here? There is a hidden, I think it's called priority. I think it's the number between 1 and 100. If you set that like that, that's actually telling the syncing it needs to be done faster. Doesn't work on Windows Phone though. It's not designed for Windows Phone. But your scenario where you're saying I would like to make a change of one device and see it on the other scrolling, I would say this is probably not the best idea. It's not designed to do real-time syncing and that sort of stuff. If you want to do that, then I'd recommend doing something like SignalR, where you can open up WebSockets and stuff like that and have it talk to a service that does that, or use some sort of peer finding stuff. There is on the Windows platform, have you guys heard of Peer Finder? So Peer Finder, it's not on the list, but I can, if you're interested, I'll give you a brief overview. If everyone at the end says that's cool, we want to know more, I'll do a quick demo. Peer Finder basically is if you've got the same app running on multiple devices, they'll be able to talk. So a classic example could be everyone's in a room and they're doing some sort of calibration thing around, oh, we want to talk about this particular information, blah, 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 and you load up your app. Your app can then say, hey, find all the apps with this application ID that are available on this network. And when I mean network, I don't mean Wi-Fi. It can be Bluetooth, whatever. You can be very specific about how you want to find them or discover them, or you can just be for all, just do a hunt and see what you can find. What this allows you to do at that point is then say, well, if I've got app A on one device and app A on another device, they can then communicate and you can send information like that, and that would be a good scenario where you could then go and do your scrolling, providing they're in the vicinity. If they're not in the vicinity, then it'd be different. If they're not connected via some sort of shared medium. Otherwise, then you could go to the cloud using SignalR would be the next best bet. Yeah. But yeah, that stuff is called Peer Finder. Yeah, I'll just quickly show you the. So there you go. So you select how you find it, and then you can do find all async peers. And what that'll do is that'll find all the peers that are available. So I'll just quickly go. Do. You guys know you shouldn't do async void, right? I should probably just mention that, yeah. Cool. Right, and there you go. So I get a list of peer information. And in that peer information, I can get the discovery name, the data, the ID, and all that of the device. But that's what you do to go and find those. Do we have any other questions? No? Should we move on? I have literally 10 minutes, so I think I'll probably cover one more topic. Where were we? There. So, performance, yes. Globalization, no, we haven't done. Roaming profiles, yes. Toastnet, oh, right, okay. Was that higher before? Did I just skip over it? No? Okay. Toast notifications, actually, because you've done tile, toast is going to be pretty easy. I can race through that. So let's do this. Source control is a wonderful thing. Does anyone use Visual Studio Online? Yeah? It's cool, right? It's got some catching up to TFS, like the big TFS, daddy TFS. But it's getting there. It's cool. Yeah, I'm having a new love for Git as well on TFS. Right, cool. So we're on toast notifications. Can't spell toast, no mind, right? Did I just do... Oh, I think I might have done the wrong one. All right, okay. No, I've got the same code. Let me go and pull off the snippet. Excuse me a minute. I generally prefer to use MSDN examples only because at least when you go back, it makes a whole world of difference because the stuff I'll show you on screen will reflect what you'll end up searching for. So dev.windows.com is always a good place to start. So let me just quickly copy this. Bring it into Visual Studio so you get a better size. Cool. Actually, look familiar? I don't think that's good. Let's get rid of that. Let's just do a basic toast. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be adventurous. Let's try this. Let's take our tile stuff, which I think is where I went slightly wrong here last time. I'm literally just going to go. So the same thing. So I've got my XML. I pass in my toast template type this time using the toast notification manager, not the tile update manager. I then go and say, well, actually, I'm going to get my element by name. So that's very similar here, and we'll just go copy that, paste. Toast notification, can't spell. Actually, I think that could be it. Was that sample a bit short? Yeah. By the way, notice you get a toast failed. That's something that I think we brought up before about tile. I don't have an app ID in this case. So basically, if you have a look at the code, actually, it's very similar to the tile stuff. We've pretty much made it as close as possible, so it's not too jarring even as a developer. There's a few differences here, but in essence, I'm still editing in XML. Matter of fact, I'll probably be able to even bring up the... let's try doing this. Can I get the toast Notification. Again, I can do the same thing, right? We have various different toasters. Not as many, obviously, as what you'd see before, but you can see that actually it still runs off an XML. So in some sense, it's almost the same XML. You know, the templates are very similar. We have images, we have text. And the idea here is I just use the manager again to go and create that toast notification. I can just show it, and that will just appear on screen. Let's try and let's do this. Because toast is something we can demo. Tile, sometimes it's a bit of a mess trying to get it working. All right, cool, let's do that. And I know I'm only demoing on an 8.1 app. But just note that because it's universal, if I wanted to do the phone app, I could still use the phone app. And the difference with the phone app is it'll also appear in the notification center. And interested to see if it'll appear here. Should we see if it maybe did execute it? No. Nope. Sorry, what was that? What did I put on the reset button? Oh, yeah. Terrible. Rookie mistake, right. Boom. Still didn't get it. All right. Yeah, I don't think it's going to. You'll have to take my word for it. So. Executed fine. All right. I don't know. But in general, that's what you'd end up doing. Now, I think it's something actually to note. So although I've explained Toast Notification Manager here, there's actually another type of notification that we have. Didn't really have much time to demo it today, but there's something called Windows Push Notification, or WNS, so Notification Service in Azure. Have you guys heard of that? What this basically allows you to do is you can actually go and push from the cloud. So at the moment, what I've done is I've had the local app, and my local app's pushing that. What I could do is I can actually push a notification out from the cloud to various devices, including Windows. And that's quite a cool scenario you can do. And that's another, it'll still appear like a normal toast, but it's just coming from somewhere else. So does anyone have any questions around this? No? So I think I'm pretty much coming close to time. I'm not sure I can cover. The only one to cover is monetization, which unfortunately is the longest one. So I probably will stop it here, I think, if that's good for people. So I suppose, let me bring back up my slides. Sorry, there are a million and one buttons I've got to press here to get it right. Right, cool. So hopefully the demos were useful. But let me just give you some related content. So. If you haven't already, I had a breakout session building apps with the cloud. I use SignalR. I don't think, did anyone attend it? Oh, cool. So you got the Star Trek demo then. Yeah, so I managed to play Star Trek to the whole audience. It's pretty epic. If you need to know more, come and see me. Or that's the gentleman over there, who's now an avid Star Trek fan, right? We've got some labs, some resources. dev.windows.com, that is going to be your home place for everything. I mean, probably not ENUS for some of us. Resources channel 9. I actually have a channel 9 video series called Inside Windows Platform, or IWP. I do a lot of work with Larry Lieberman and people from the product group, and we'll come on the show and we'll talk about various things. It's normally like a 10-15 minute session. Some Windows 10 resources, I'm sure you've seen this. And I've been told that this slide has probably been seen the most by everyone. So please fill out your evaluations. You know, if you need any help, I can show you where 5 stars is. It's not a problem. Tell me what you think. And again, like I said, if you think it's a 1 star, come and find me. Let's go and talk about it. Let me give you my details as well. All right, cool. So yeah. So feel free to contact me at any time. Any questions about anything, preferably about Microsoft platform, that'd be better. just yeah, ping me a mail. I'm more than happy to help. So yeah, thanks. It's been an absolute pleasure.